Okay. RK 101 under Brahmacharya. I mean, today there is this LGBHT, whatever it's called. Well, the multi-gender thing, and you aren't what you were born into, and you know, all that kind of stuff. So, but there's another one here that I think we should, you know, because, please, transcriptor, whoever you are, remove all the you knows. Anyway, there's another one category that should be here. Supported and given its right and encouragement, actually, and that is the celibate one. Some people, they choose to live in celibacy for a while, at least. Some, they do it all their lives. And in this modern culture, that may sometimes be seen as the most pervert thing to do. So, but we who live or have lived in celibacy, let us unite, and we now raise up and demonstrate our rights. We deserve respect as ordinary humans, as worthy being ourselves as anyone else. Now, seriously, what we're talking about here can also include that celibacy, that for, especially for Brahmachari, and I'm also speaking here in feminine tense, or what do you call it, feminines. So, rather than Brahmachari, Brahmacharini, let's just include all genders there, right? Because it's about studying, learning Brahman. But also, I think it is good, for me it was, to spend some time, to spend your youth, basically, those years before you actually meet someone who you really, really love and respect and feel like spending your life together with, okay? And during those years or that time, this is the perfect time for this Brahmacharya, which may include celibacy. In other words, okay, I'm a 70s guy. We were not famous for living in celibacy. Rather, the contrary, to fuck around, as they say today. One night stands was the standard. And I wasn't like that. I wanted a real relationship, deeper. Otherwise, wait with sex. And that's what I did after my first relationship, which was basically only about sex. So, and then it became celibacy for me. For some years, and then eventually, well, quite a few years, and eventually when I entered family life and all that, well, I shouldn't use myself as an example here because my life has been weird. But I understand, I realized, I could understand that for us in general, you know, let me put it like this, that when we were fooling around there back in the 70s, being quite promiscuous, as they would say it today, and pretty much the opposite of the grandparents, who were very Victorian and very Puritan, kind of uptight in this whole regard. As we saw it, we went completely the other way, which sometimes turned into basically an immoral way. Not, I mean, generally, well, anyway, as long as you don't hurt anyone, and that's how they are talking today. But what happens is when you just go out there and you find someone good looking and someone who you're attracted to sexually, that you just jump into bed together, or you meet someone and you hang out, have a few dates, and then by standard you should jump into bed together. Because, and why am I saying that this is not always the good and right thing to do for you? Might not give the good result that we of course expect and hope for when we get into relationships. Because sex, a sexual act, is a very, very powerful thing, a very powerful experience. There is a kind of strong bond there that tends to, you know, I mean, emotional attachment and all that, it tends to develop during a sexual act. You get, of course, each other very close, and that is powerful. And if, for instance, one in that couple gets seriously attached to and so to the other one, and the other one is just fooling around having one, a new one every night or something like that, then it can cause a lot of suffering. So, for example, but and another thing that may happen then is that sex becomes a form, and of course the, generally for many, the major supreme form of sense gratification, of enjoyment, of enjoying the pleasures of the senses, because after all, that's pretty much what it can be, right? You tickle those senses until it really feels good. That's basically all it is on that physical level, on a certain level. But as we know, we call it making love. It's supposed to be an act of love between two people who love each other. And therefore, logically, my conclusion here is that have sex when you are in love. And if you have it without being in love, the tendency is that it becomes a kind of mutual masturbation. You know, here, you're good looking enough. I think you can give me pleasure. And that is lust, really. Not I love you, but I lust you. I have lust for you because you can give me pleasure. And look at me, I'm able to give you pleasure too. And then, yes, let's jump into bed and we give each other pleasure. You do that thing and you do that. Sometimes it becomes a routine also, right? But that's not what it's about. Then it becomes a very physical act, especially, of course, when it's really established because of physical attraction, which also makes that those young people, because that's what I'm talking about here, sometimes really fixated on their looks. Just look at how it looks today. How the girls look and the boys, and you can see they're really spending a lot of effort and time, and I think also money, on styling themselves, painting that skin perfectly and having that hair perfectly, all the little other things, and the clothes and the bags and the shoes and the everything, and making it look casual at the same time. You know, there is a whole art, but you can see that they really know what they're doing. And why? Because I don't know, but I guess sometimes it can be a creative expression of yourself, but sometimes I think it can also be, I have to look good enough, otherwise no boy will like me or no girl will like me if I don't look really cool. So it can become very superficial and very bodily oriented. But it's supposed to be love. So there is this dichotomy there in a way, isn't it? And that sexual thing. It can be an act of love, but it can also be an act of lust, of complete selfishness. And therefore, in wisdom traditions and like in Bhakti Yoga here, we often hear the best is to refrain from sex altogether, because then there is a risk that you just fall in lust and you go down there into that pit of material attachment and all that and get stuck in it. Well, we have grihastha life. It's not that it's forbidden, but rather, the way I understand it, and you are free to disagree with me, is that, yes, do that, but with love instead of lust. That's quite kind of obvious, isn't it? A love that, yes, it definitely includes lust too, because we have sexual drives, all of us, and we are attracted to the opposite sex or whatever sex. But this whole relationship should be in a way you could say a yogic path, because you go there from what may be very lusty and animalistic desires for some soft skin to rub and some, I mean, the way we guys spoke about girls when we were young, I don't know how they do it today, but I mean, that's where many start, to be honest. But you're supposed to gradually go from there and up to actually soul-to-soul love. And when you have soul-to-soul love, then that is the same love as you have to God. Because that love is to God and to all God's parts and parcels. So I would say if you see it that way, both the time of celibacy and the time of householder life, then it becomes part of your bhakti yoga path. So, but now we're talking about brahmacharya here, so we can conclude it there somehow.